Hello and welcome to Fraggle Talk Classic, the unofficial Fraggle Rock podcast brought to you by toughpigs.com. My name is Beth, and I am rewatching for the millionth time.
My name is Julia, and I'm rewatching for the first time in 10 years.
My name is Adam, and I'm watching it for the first time ever, but I'm listening to it for God knows how many times, because who knows what I hear when I'm asleep.
That's so cryptic.
Today we are talking about episode 4 of season 2, Red's Sea Monster. It originally aired on January 23rd, 1984, written by David Young. Previously, he had written Catch the Tail by the Tiger, The Finger of Light, and Marooned.
Ooh.
And directed by Terry Maskell. First episode they directed, but in season 3 to 5 would go on to direct 16 more.
Dang.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just think it's really cool that we're finally getting stories about extroverts making introvert friends.
You know, oh, that is true.
Oh, boy. You're not wrong.
So we open with Doc drying lettuce leaves.
Seaweed.
And
it's
not actual seaweed. Yeah.
And I had an intense, I had like this huge flashback. Did anybody else listen to Auto-Tune the News?
No.
Yeah.
What they would do is they would take clips from 24-hour news podcasts and just like auto-tune them and add beats and add like extra lyrics and just like make the news into music.
Nice.
And it was, I mean, it wasn't always good, but they had some absolute bobs. And one of them was about, it was a Senate floor hearing where this dude who was obviously a shill for tobacco was trying to make the point that, like, it's not the nicotine that causes lung cancer, it's the smoke. And his example is, you know, if you take lettuce and you dry it and you roll it and you smoke it, you're going to get the same kind of cancerous effects as if you were smoking nicotine. And the whole song is just about smoking lettuce. And how, like, oh, nobody's going to stop us from smoking lettuce. You can't take our lettuce. We're Americans. And so it opened to Doc clearly drying this lettuce. And I was just like, did Fraggle Rock predict the future? What in the world is happening?
Oh, that's a lot of lettuce to smoke.
I mean, if anyone could, it's Doc. Let's be real. But, like, the thing that I appreciate the most about this is we see the lettuce, we see the fan, and then the first lines are from Gobo.
Yeah.
We're breaking up the rhythm of the episode a little bit. Instead of having it just be like, ah, haha, good morning, Doc and Sprocket. We're like, no, actually, here's a little bit of Gobo. Then here's some Doc and Sprocket. And then here's some more Gobo. And I like the little variety. I like the little variance.
Yeah, Doc isn't even in the workshop at this point. We see him come in closer to the end of this first segment.
Mm-hmm.
With more seaweed. Or lettuce that is being called seaweed.
Yeah, so there's a fan going, and Gobo comments that the hairy creature has a magic wind weapon.
I was just going to say, have we seen the Fraggles with fans at all?
Nope.
Cool. So this is just really good world building.
Yeah.
That I approve of them writing. That's fantastic writing.
The Fraggles, as far as we can tell, do not have electricity.
I even just meant like a hand fan, but I can see that would be an interesting... I think the only time we might have seen that would have been in the Precification of Convincing John, if they really wanted to lean into the, like,
right.
There revival might have been imagery.
Some background Fraggles with some hand fans. They definitely have that level of technology.
Mm-hmm.
That's true, but I can see them not making the connection. No, that does make sense.
Yeah, they're so different. There's a great moment where Gobo, after talking to Wimbley about the magic wind weapon, says, like, so dramatically, better be quick today, Gobo. He says that to himself, and then he rushes out, and then immediately, like, almost gets tangled up in the hanging seaweed, and it's just, it's funny, and then, like, Sprocket tries to catch him, then he gets tangled up and Gobo gets away, and it's, like, so much, like, physical stuff happening immediately in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Which is also fantastic puppetry, because that's all like one take. We get to see Sprocket startle, the lettuce line fall over, Gobo get tangled in it, Gobo like quickly untangle himself and bolt while Sprocket tries to chase him but is still tangled. That's all puppetry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So I love that here Doc is, he's kind of a less charming version of, and a less informative version of Alexis Nicole, a.k.a. the Black Forager.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who, if you don't follow on social media, you absolutely should. Even if you have, like, no interest in foraging, she's just, like, super charming and knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. And you get to learn about plants and which plants are surprisingly edible and which ones have been, like, you know, maligned for colonialist reasons and super fascinating stuff. And I love the episodes where she goes to the seashore and collects seaweed and does cool things with it.
I mean, in this one, Doc is not wrong. Seaweed is pretty good for you. It's a good part of your diet. And so, I don't know, we've seen him have so many strange fixations through the course of a season and some change. And so this one, I was like, yeah, I mean, maybe he's going a little bit overboard with the amount of seaweed he is drying in his house. But like, this seems like a healthier lifestyle choice than we've seen Doc make in the past.
A broken fox will write twice a day, huh?
Right, right on the money.
Also, let me just real quick, I want to push my nerd glasses up on the bridge of my nose here. Seaweed's actually not a plant. It's a protist.
What's a protist?
A protist? What is a protist?
Protist is the, like, grab bag kingdom for stuff that doesn't fit into the other four.
Oh.
If it's not an animal, a plant, a fungus, or a microbacteria, they're like, eh, it's a protist.
Is
sure.
it, like, a cousin of a plant?
I know, because no. then it would probably still be in the plant kingdom.
Okay. Interesting.
I don't know any more than that. It's just one of my favorite weird little trivia facts. Whenever people are like, I need to eat more plants, I'm like, seaweed's not a plant. So it's a protist.
Presumably, they're still photosynthetic, right? Because they are green.
I don't think they are, actually. Hold on, let me check
water,
this out.
Though.
Research time. And also, there's like a million different kinds of seaweed, so let's be clear that Doc is not telling us what kind of seaweed he's collecting.
He's collecting the lettuce seaweed, of course.
The one that looks like lettuce, yes.
Ooh, seaweed refers to macroscopic multicellular marine algae. The term includes some algae, seaweed species such as kelps.
Macroscopic algae.
Planktonic algae play a vital role in capturing carbon, leading to taxonomy. Lacks a formal definition, generally lives eelgrass, refers both to flowering plants and the... Okay, well, so you know what? It turns out, I was being generalistic when there's actually an incredible... Yeah, you're right. Cool. Hey, wait, it turns out reality's more complicated than a pithy comment?
Oh,
what?
Man.
No, I disagree.
Well, there goes my plans for the day if I have to think about things complexly.
Right? It takes so much work. Why can't I just watch Fox News? Well, tell me what's... I'm sorry. Anyways, I'm not sorry. No, I'm not. Speaking of Fox News, Sprocket is trying to talk about the Fraggles, and Doc just starts, like, gaslighting him adorably.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, those little animals aren't real. And it's like, Doc, don't gaslight your dog. And then I thought, don't we all gaslight our dogs? Is not pretending to throw the ball without actually throwing the ball gaslighting?
Yeah, aww. Or telling a dog, like, saying the T word, the treat word. There's a dog over there.
T-R-E-A-T?
Right, T-R-E-A-T word. Yeah. When you don't actually have one on you, but you need to get them back into the house. And so, that is true. I do often gaslight dogs for a living wage.
Which, like, you know, maybe we should think about that just as a species. Maybe we should think about gaslighting. You know, maybe we shouldn't gaslight dogs.
So I wrote down, aha, we have entered the grown-ups think Snuffy is imaginary phase.
Ooh.
Because here's the difference. Gaslighting is when you know the other person is right and you're trying to make them believe that they're wrong. It's something different when you genuinely think that they're wrong and you're like, oh, no, honey, no. Like, Doc genuinely believes
right.
that Sprocket is, you know, that's your imagination, or, you know, there aren't little creatures living behind these walls. If Doc knew about the Fraggles and was saying this, that would be gaslighting.
That's true.
You are so right, actually. That is my bad.
Yeah. I think that gaslighting is one of those terms that just kind of gets generalized these days. Whereas, yeah, it's a very intentional action to purposely make someone think that they are losing their mind.
Right.
Which Doc is not always the best, but does not go that far.
But at least he doesn't do that.
At least he doesn't do that.
Wow. This is twice in a row now that you've pointed out that, like, my simplistic summation of events aren't actually accurate and that there's more complexity and nuance. Next, you're going to tell me I need to close Tucker Carlson and start reading, like, Mother Jones or Daily Beast or something. Come on.
Well, so I think we had... Apologies if we talked about this on the podcast before. The term that I...
Why would you apologize for that? That's on brand.
Check it off your bingo card.
It's like a fish being like, hey, I'm sorry if I swim in the river, you guys.
I think I had talked before about, I tried to invent the term cast lighting for when someone is being a Cassandra. Like, they're right, but everyone thinks that they're wrong. And so Sprocket is right. There are little creatures living behind the walls, and he's being a Cassandra. Like, he's making these prophecies that will turn out to be true. And Doc is like, no. And then same with Red.
I do like that. Although I think you could just call it Cassandra-ing.
Well, yeah, but then you'd miss the pun of castlighting.
You can't miss a good pun.
I mean, you can. If there's like a really good pun and you're like friends with them and then they like go to college across country, you're going to miss your good pun.
Oh, boy.
And like, you can call them on the phone, but it's not
the same.
We're
10 minutes in and we haven't even really gotten to the Fraggles.
Right. We go to the Fraggles.
The Fraggles.
They're at the pond.
We go to the Fraggles.
Red's trying to beat Gobo's breath-holding record, and we learn about a new form of measurement with the Fraggles that makes not the most sense, because it's so
and
subjective.
Yet it makes total sense
it does for them.
Them. Mm-hmm.
It does. We also learned that Marlin is kind of simping a little hard for Red.
Marlin's
yeah,
back.
Let's talk about Marlin. So we had learned in the previous time that we met him that he has tried unsuccessfully to start a cult that no one wants to join.
Yeah.
And now we hear him saying that with me counting, you're sure to win, like in an insinuating tone of voice. And I'm just like, okay, what do we do as a society with people like Marlin? If we cast them out completely, they're just going to dig their heels in and become even more isolated and convinced that they need, you know, to be adored by society because they're so misunderstood. And when we embrace them fully into society, you get weird, awkward moments like this. And so I was like, okay, there's something here about the intersection of ableism and misogyny, because you get like the creepy guy being weird to the female character, and but then there's the ableism aspect of like he probably doesn't know he's being creepy, and there's like social rules that he probably doesn't understand, and I'm like something, there's a point here that I'm trying to tease out and I'm not sure how.
I got you, because I know the answer to that.
I thought you might. Was this the dynamic you were got lots to think about?
Kinda. There's the meat on the bones for me is really the final discussion he has with Red.
Yes, we'll get that.
But this whole thing sort of is the overarching thing, and it's near and dear to me because I was a young, awkward, autistic person who made people uncomfortable and caused social harm before I managed to pull my head out of my butt. And I also want to amend that previous statement because it was not me that did it. I did it with a lot of community support.
Mm.
The key importance is you are welcome here. This behavior is not.
Ooh.
Yeah. Boundaries.
I like that framing.
It's the specific boundary of like you as a person. There's not necessarily anything wrong with you as a person. There are certain things that you are doing that are making people uncomfortable, and if you stop doing those things, people will be more comfortable around them.
Right.
And this particular scene, like, it was uncomfortable and awkward and cringy, but it also kind of broke my heart a little bit because he's trying to be useful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It seems, and maybe I'm projecting, I'm definitely projecting, but he's very much like, okay, people don't want to hang out with me. What if I at least make myself useful? What if I can, like, make my companionship a benefit to someone? Maybe then they'll want me around.
Yeah, I'm going to make sure that Red not only breaks the record, I'm going to get a higher number than everybody else.
So I can, my take will be of value. It's interesting because, yeah, I mean, I can on some levels relate to Marlin there, but also I have been in Red's situation where there is somebody in my friend group, you know, especially in my time in college, who maybe made me feel uncomfortable in ways that I was treated by often a he, a him, but, you know, because of, giving leeway and, you know, maybe not laying out the best boundaries, I had to be like, well, he's a friend of ours, so I guess I can't really complain if I feel uncomfortable. And so I can kind of see both sides of it in that way.
Right.
I mean, it's also worth noting that it's, like, harder on a societal level for you to set boundaries and have them stick because of misogyny.
Yeah.
Right.
You know.
I will say it was very, very interesting for me. And like that was definitely the first step is like I had a community that was like, hey, we'll talk to you about how to do social stuff. Like you very clearly need help here. But these are the behaviors that you need to change. And then the second step was I got to go to college and I got to, like, be out and bisexual and attempt to flirt with men and get to be on the other end of this dynamic. Like, I got to stop being the Marlin and start being the Red. And I was like, oh, I know what to do about this. You say this is the behavior that is not welcome, but you're still cool. And like a 50-50 success rate at best. The number of times that that was completely ignored and people would just continue to, like, push and wheedle and try to find a crack in my boundaries. And I had to be like, wow, leave me alone. Go away.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other question that that teases out is, at what point does a pattern of behavior that is not welcome here become, okay, now you have shown an unwillingness to learn and change. You are not welcome here until you can fix this behavior.
Yeah. Which, I mean, for me at least, I like to give a couple of chances.
Oh, yeah.
But the ones that are really scary, and this is getting past where I think Marlin has the level of social competence for, but the people who are, like, willing and able to put on a, like, performance of trying to learn while still doing the same things, like, that is the scary level of manipulation that keeps me up at night. That is terrifying. But we've gotten a little bit deeper into the weeds. And there's definitely going to be an opportunity to chomp on this. So, yeah, you were saying.
So the system of counting where silly creatures might say, you know, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. The Fraggles are counting one rock beetle, two rock beetle, three rock beetle. But they are counting at three completely different speeds.
Four, if you count the fact that Red is counting in her head while she is underwater.
Oh, that's right. So, yeah, I think, yeah, Red comes up with 11. Moki says it was only 5. Boober says
3 for Boober.
3, and Marlin says 15 in the same amount of time.
Yeah, vastly different amounts, which we see Marlin counting really fast. Boober's really enunciating and going slow. Moki's probably actually counting, like, the correct, like, beats that if you are going to try to, like, track this as measurement,
right,
you know, she's being diligent. And then if you're underwater and you're holding your breath, of course, you're going to also, like, speed it up because you're trying to, like, I don't know, not be under there for too long. It's really interesting in the fact that how they all kind of carry themselves with, like, no, this is my way. This is the correct answer. Like, Marlin is so adamant because, as we already talked about, he wants to be liked. He wants his answer to be correct so he can be seen of value. Boober is so blasé. He was like, no, it's this. It's not a huge deal. And then we get Moki, who just kind of wants to make, like, everybody happy and, like, doesn't want to hurt Red's feelings, but also knows that she's probably not incorrect with how she counted. And it's just all of this, like, I don't know, configuration of different voices coming into play, whereas Red is just being stubborn and is like, no, I definitely did it. I definitely beat this record.
Yeah. And it's the first instance we get of Red being told that she exaggerates.
Yeah.
Which in this instance may be true.
Have we not gotten that before?
I mean in this episode.
Oh, okay. Sure.
We've seen it happen. It hasn't been named.
Right.
We've seen Red be stubborn 110 times. But yeah, this really, I don't know, puts a lens on her stubbornness and how competitive she is. And, you know, she likes being the center of attention.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. I also just want to point out, that's a puppet underwater. They did that again. They got somebody reaching up through the bottom of a tank, puppeting a puppet. And then after she gets out, the puppet still has wet hair.
Yeah.
Which is just no seams in the world building. None whatsoever.
I love when the Fraggles get to swim.
It's so nice. There's a lot of good water puppeteering in this episode.
Yeah.
But then we get the postcard from Traveling Matt. And I only have one line about this one. And it's, so, can somebody else explain the postcard so I can come in with my one line?
Apparently, Traveling Matt does not know what twins are. He bumps into a young woman who drops her books, and while she's picking up the books, her twin sister comes up from behind, dressed exactly the same. And Matt thinks that he has accidentally split this creature in two. But they seem to be perfectly happy with it, so it just went on their way. Like, I wanted to apologize, but this was just a very strange thing.
Okay, is it just me? Or were they throwing flirty eyes at Matt? And, like, sultry flirty eyes?
They're kind of looking at him for a second.
They're kind of, there's definitely a like, ooh, this little guy could get it kind of vibe. And the camera lingers for like a full 2 to 3 seconds.
Yeah, like if they, it was an interesting choice.
It was definitely, it, I don't know. I just recently watched CJ the X's video on the Folgers commercial and oh it definitely God. Reminded me of that.
It's only a matter of time before our podcast references the Folgers commercial.
I see. I was so hoping you were going to say it was only a matter of time before our podcast referenced CJ the X.
I don't know CJ the X. I am familiar with the Folgers commercial.
Well, CJ the X, they have a really great video on the Folgers commercial, and I think that's all I want to say about it.
So there are a lot of Folgers commercials. Which one specifically are we?
You know, this is a particular can of worms that I think I'm going to regret having cracked open.
Oh, boy.
You can do your own
research
on that.
If you just Google that Folgers commercial, it's the one that the whole internet has talked about. It's
okay.
CJ the X has a really good video about it. It talks a little bit about the history. It talks a little bit about the I will send you the video.
Great.
CJ the X is great. They're aggressively neurodivergent and they make really solid comedy and content. So highly recommend.
Love that.
My big take for this postcard. I mean, my twin is I am a cis female, my twin is a cis male, but still, like, even when we were,
I have a twin.
I didn't know your brother was
a twin. He's,
I didn't know you had a brother.
He is, you know, we are not identical. He is a whole foot taller than me, and we look like siblings, but we don't look, you know, like twins. But mm-hmm. even when we were kids, like, I guess maybe when we were babies, our parents dressed us the same, but I also have plenty of friends who are twins, who are identical twins. Once you reach a certain age, you do not dress the same as your twin. I was like, I don't...
Unless you're trying to pull off a prank.
Oh, yeah, I guess if you're trying to pull a parent trap on the situation. I was like, I don't believe that these adult twins would be like, hey, what are you wearing today? We're gonna dress the same. Although maybe there are twins out in the world who that is like their whole thing when they get together. They're like, we gotta be as confusing as possible for everybody in the surroundings.
I mean, maybe one of them was like, hey, I don't know, we're gonna meet up at the park. And the other one was like, ooh, what if we meet up with any like 2-foot-tall, really scruffy, attractive gentleman? Better wear our denim just so we can
Matt
seduce
can
him.
Matt can pull twins. That's wild. Yeah.
I mean, first the storyteller, now this.
Matt's a hunk, apparently.
Everybody wants to get with Traveling
Matt.
Mustache.
We've talked about how silly creatures may not see Matt as a Fraggle, because they don't know what Fraggles are. They may, you know, they may see whatever it is that they're most expecting to see. Maybe here, they're seeing a short, handsome person, and my mind automatically goes to Peter Dinklage.
I mean, Peter Dinklage is very good looking.
Peter Dinklage could pull
twins.
He
definitely could. He definitely did on Game of Thrones.
Right?
Oh, yeah, he did, didn't he?
Ugh. My movie group recently rewatched Cyrano. Ugh.
Oh, I love Cyrano.
So good. Anyway.
What's the correlation of this postcard to the rest of the episode? Just, like, Matt seeing something that is, like, unbelievable that someone might not take his word for?
Yeah. Because afterwards they say, Gobo says, the thing I like about Uncle Matt is that he never exaggerates.
Yeah.
Nothing but the straight goods from that guy. And I was like, wow, way to foreshadow the next episode, mm-hmm. buddy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Matt doesn't necessarily purposefully exaggerate. Like, he is saying the things that he thinks he is perceiving. He's just maybe
right.
As far as we see.
That's true. I guess we don't. We're only getting, I mean, I guess, yeah, Matt's probably somewhat of an unreliable narrator. He's entirely an unreliable narrator.
Right.
The question is just, like, does he know he's being unreliable or is it purposeful?
Right. Yeah. How much of his own BS does he actually believe? Mm-hmm.
That is fair. And I think we do get to see him oscillate pretty easily between earnest and self-important.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that, actually. That's a pretty, not a common dynamic.
Yeah.
So we cut back, and they're all trying to talk about what to do because Red stormed off. And Moki is the one who's worried about hurting someone's feelings, which, like, hey, character growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's nice to see.
Good for you, Moki. So, yeah, Red kind of goes off on her own and wanders to a different little secluded pond that's lovely. It's got, you know, the sunlight on water reflections on the stones. I don't know how they did that. It's got some, like, cool, like a cluster of purple crystal in the background and water lilies all over the place. And we get this lovely song.
I loved this song.
I thought you might.
I have in my notes, I say, this is also a standard kind of mm-hmm. sad, pensive, Fraggle song, but this one's actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
The meter is really sharp. The rhyme scheme is really elegant. This genuinely feels like a sort of a nostalgic kind of wistful expression of somebody actually processing an emotion.
Yeah.
I have this thing where I get really frustrated by songs that are sort of written to fit a genre instead of written to be honest to themselves.
Mm.
And this one really feels like it was written to be honest to itself and just happens to fit this genre.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this. And also, like, you know me, when I see singing plants as background singers, I get happy. And we get them two episodes
That's
in a row.
True.
Yeah, the little singing cave clams.
This song is also just very, like, beautifully written. That, like, I wrote down the line, "I was in love with the soft river flow." That's poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, as she began singing, I was like, okay, this is sad Fraggle solo song time. But yeah, this song really stuck out to me compared to most of the songs we've gotten this season. So that was wonderful to see.
Yeah, it's one that I have not found any covers of out there in the world, but would love to hear some good covers of this one.
Yeah.
Because it's worth it.
It is very good. It is very worth it. So she's singing, and then a deep sea horror anglerfish trumpet comes out of the water and toots at her.
Yep. That is an apt description.
It's also purple.
Yes. I wrote a long purple something.
Yeah, I thought it looked like a Venus flytrap. A purple Venus flytrap with a lot of just, like, tendrils around the mouth, because I couldn't remember what this thing was actually going to look like when we fully saw it. And mm-hmm. I was like, this is so weird looking.
And it's unclear what of those tendrils is, like, a purple water plant
mm-hmm. oh, true.
Hanging off of it, and what is, like, you know, little catfish tendrils or whatnot.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it freaks Red out, and she runs away. And then I wrote down, oh, this is going to be a Boy Who Cried Wolf episode.
Mm-hmm.
You're not wrong.
It does kind of have that, but there's obviously more depth to it as we go along.
Right.
Nope, just Boy Who Cried Wolf. That's it.
That's it.
One for one yep. analogy.
No. Doesn't the boy get eaten by the wolf at the end of that story?
Depending on which version.
That's how this episode ends, right?
Red gets eaten.
The purple thing eats Red, and then we never see her again.
Red's just gone for the next 2.5, 3.5 seasons.
Anyways, so she's telling them about the sea monster, and she's all excited, and then as soon as she mentions that it has a wind weapon, Gobo's like, wait a second,
mm-hmm.
you're just trying to ride my coattails to glory.
But also, before she starts telling them that...
Yeah, so we cut back to Gobo and Wembley, with Wembley trying to learn guitar, and Gobo teaching him.
Is it Gobo's, like, little ukulele lute guitar, and Wembley's trying to mm-hmm. learn it, correct?
I think they each have one, okay. either... now or later, but I think later they each have one.
Well, no, Gobo has a slide guitar.
Oh, please elaborate. What?
So slide guitar, and we see him play it in the blues song later, but a slide guitar is a traditionally sort of bluesy instrument where it's like a guitar, except you put it flat, and then you strum it with one hand, and with the other hand you have a slide, which is either made out of metal or glass.
Mm.
And it means you can just sort of flow really smoothly between notes.
Nice.
And you hear it. You hear that style, and there's a lot of really beautiful stuff in this styling because you can literally just pluck a note and then just slide your finger up. And instead of going, like on a guitar, it would be if you do a hammer-on note. With a slide guitar, it's you get all of the notes in between.
Interesting.
Okay.
Because you're not compressing the note past the fret. You're just compressing the note with the finger that has the slide on it. I'm doing a terrible job of explaining this, but I hope that made any kind of sense.
No, I was just going to say, like, thank you. This has been Adam's Music Corner.
I really want to get a slide guitar. They're so cool, and they sound so good.
And Wembley is worried that his hands are too small.
He yells, oh, the curse of small hands. Because I think they tell him that his hands aren't big enough for the instrument he's trying to learn to play. And it's just, it's such, like, a small, tiny, like, moment before we get back into Red, like, coming in and telling them what she saw. I live for these little moments on Fraggle Rock that don't, you know, this doesn't like really, I guess it kind of comes into play when they start playing music later in the episode, but they really didn't need it. And still it's like, mm-hmm. it almost feels like it's just like a little improvised scene that the three of them were doing as like Karen and Kathy were coming in with their puppets. And it's just delightful and funny.
See, I just love that we get to see somebody learning a thing and not starting off good at it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, I love that we get to see people on the journey to competence and not there yet. And also, like, anyone who's ever picked up an instrument like a guitar or piano, like, has worried that their hands are too small. And I want to put on my musician hat for a second and tell you, they're not. Aww. You can either get a smaller instrument or you can find an interesting way to play. I had a friend whose hands were literally too small to do octaves on a piano. And so when she was doing her left hand, she would just do fifths. And sometimes she would throw a sixth or a seventh on there. And you know what? It sounded great.
I love that. So yeah, Red comes back raving about the sea monster that she saw. And as soon as she says that it had a magic wind weapon, because it like blew her hair back, suddenly Gobo starts to suspect that this is too similar to what he said earlier about what he saw in outer space. Too similar to be real. She's obviously making it up.
Mm-hmm. And she gets really frustrated. And she's like, no, I'll prove it. And Gobo has this great bit, and he says, yeah, and then we'll go in the hot sun and chase our tails. And then Wembley just kind of looks at his tail like, huh. And Boober comes back and is like, he was only joking. And Wembley goes, oh, well, sounded good to me. Which, Wembley is neurodivergent.
Yep. Why wouldn't we chase our tails? That sounds fun.
Yeah, sounds like a good time. Good way to kill 10 minutes. Maybe you catch it, and then you get the dopamine.
So she brings them back to the pond to try and prove it. And there's a bubbling in the water when the purple thing appeared, and now there's a bubbling in the water again, and
it's just sea moss, right?
It's just moss, yeah.
And then Boober says, like, yes, indeed, this is top quality shenanigans.
Yes. They're all like, okay, you've had your joke, that top quality shenanigans, good for you, and now the joke is over, Red.
Mm-hmm. She's like, it's not a joke. And Gobo's like, wow, you're really stubborn. And she yells, I am not stubborn! Which it's such a common trope, but it makes me so happy every time. They're like, I am cold!
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, then doesn't Gobo, like, turn to everyone else and he's like, okay, let's all make a note that Red is not stubborn.
Right.
Right? Which, like, dang, what a burn.
This is kind of like the return. I feel like Gobo was a huge jerk in the first half of season one, and then we kind of got this pivot to him being more of a leader. Mm-hmm. And now it's not that he isn't still, like, a leader in elements in this season so far, but the jerkness has also come back a little bit. I think that they, I don't know, want to have more complexity to his character and be like, he can do this, but he can also do this.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know. That seems like what they're trying to say is that growth isn't linear, which, like, that's mm-hmm. obviously not true, right? I refuse to grow because the only way I can grow is linearly, and that means I just don't grow.
Good luck with that.
Right? Yeah, it's been treating me actually really difficult so far, but I assume that's just a personal failing of mine and not any kind of systemic anything.
Oh, man. So when they leave, Red immediately is like, this is dumb. I mean, I'm dumb. Well, maybe it was only my imagination. And that's when I was yelling in my notes, Red, you stop gaslighting yourself this instant.
Yeah.
I mean, memory is not a perfect thing. I don't know if this still falls under the thing of gaslighting. This could just be self-questioning. Genuine doubt isn't a gaslighting, is it?
That's a good point.
I don't know if it's possible. I've heard of the term, like, gaslighting yourself, but I don't know if that's actually a thing if we were to further examine it.
Right. Because you would have to be knowing that you're right, but then convincing yourself that you're wrong?
Which, if anything, that feels like a response to some trauma, something you've actually gone through.
Or like a rationalization kind of a thing, which even then you're not doing it to try to make yourself crazy, you're doing it to try to justify a thing.
Yeah, right. Or just to survive and to cope and continue through something.
Yep.
Yeah.
So,
which in this instance makes sense. If you see something absolutely wild that you've never seen before, and then it's been a while, and you have failed to produce any proof of it, you might start to doubt yourself.
Mm-hmm. But lucky for Red, the sea monster comes back, and this time we see it in its full form, where it looks like a giant purple horse with some stuff on its head.
It does kind of look like a Knuckle-a-V a little bit.
A what now?
Knuckle-a-V, old folklore creature, kind of like a water horse, but without skin.
Ooh.
I'm going to Google this. How do you spell that?
Oh, God. Knuckle-eve, I think.
I will also say that Red, in response to seeing this thing, says, this is the hugest thing in the universe, to which I say, Red, you've seen the Gorgs before. What are you talking about?
Exactly what I said. Like, girl, you have been captured by Gorgs.
I also just, like, I love this thing. And also, this is a mm-hmm. massive puppet that comes from underwater.
Yeah.
This is big enough that there's got to be at least two people wielding it, mm-hmm. which means that there's two people either reaching or standing up through water to make a puppet move.
So it's credited, puppeteered by Bob Stutt.
Mm-hmm.
There is no second credit, but that is usually the case for puppeteers who are right-handing someone else or, you know, assisting someone else in a larger puppet, that usually the person who's doing the head and the voice will get the puppeteering credit. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if this took two or more people.
Yeah.
But yeah, and they... It starts talking to her, and she's like, oh my god, you can talk. And they have this really kind of sweet, almost like intimate moment, and all my brain could think was, wow, Fraggle Talk walked, so Shape of Water could run. but she's like, why didn't you want to meet my friends? And it's basically just says, like, no, I'm the last of the lily creatures. Like, I need to be safe. And I wrote, aw, it's autistic.
Mm-hmm.
Or it has PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
Tomato, tomato.
And then her reaction is to then run away, like, screaming for her friends to come look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it, you know, it gets freaked out and dives back under the water.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, same, dude.
Yeah.
If I was hanging out with a cool person and then they were like, I'm going to go get a bunch of strangers, I would also submerge myself so that I could not be seen. That's why I like hanging out at McDonald's, because you could do that in a ball pit.
And they start yelling, I'm going to get a bunch of strangers. They go from this, like, nice, quiet conversation. It seems to be the loudness that scared it off both times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, her screaming both times. And also when she was singing the quiet, gentle song the first time
mm-hmm.
is when it came out. And this time after her friends have left and she's just quietly talking to herself, that's when it seems to feel the safest. Which, if it's the last one trying to survive, makes perfect sense.
Right.
Yeah. So everybody comes back, and the only person who believes her, they decide they're going to play a trick on her.
Well, so first, we cut to a group scene where she's gathered a gaggle of Fraggles, including, you know, her regular friends and Marlin and some background Fraggles. And of course, Marlin is the one who believes her wholeheartedly right away.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the only one who offers to, like, go with her to try to, you know, wait it out to see it. And she tries to see if anyone else is interested, and no one else is. So she kind of just has to settle with taking Marlin with her.
Mm-hmm. Which she does. And they get to have an actual kind of human moment where she's like, I mean, you came with me. And he's like, well, yeah, no, like, I get why you're doing this. You want to be proven right. You want to be accepted and validated with this attention. And for, like, a little bit, Marlin gets to feel less alone in his loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of a really, like, I see why they played it the way they did, because having him act as a foil to Red is a really useful thing. But also, it would have been a really cool moment to have her be like, I mean, like, you know, you could be less lonely if you just sort of talked and treated people like people and thought about what you would do would make other people feel before you did it.
Yeah.
It also made me think about, I really like Fog. I really like Fog a lot, and that's because, like, everybody, if you're walking through fog, you're alone. Like, you can't see anything.
Mm.
But we also know that everybody else in the fog is also alone, so we're, like, not alone and being alone, and I think that's really neat.
I mean, we'd really get to learn a lot about Marlin in the sequence, you know, when mm-hmm. he tells her, like, straight up why he came with her, and, you know, he says, I have a vision. Once we, alone, have made contact with the beast, other Fraggles will admire us greatly. They will shower us with invitations, but we will have to turn them down because we are so busy, so very busy with our full and happy lives. And my reaction to that was writing, oh my god, in my notes. But also, like, thinking on it, it is very sad, you know? He's doing this because he just wants people to like him and wants to be... You know, he brings up popularity later in the episode, mm-hmm. but ultimately, you know... I went on a lot the first time we saw Marlin in season one because he was played as kind of a creepy joke of a character. You know, he wanted to start a cult. He wanted power. He was portrayed as this character that we're like, oh, we're not really supposed to like him. We're supposed to see that Fraggles can have, like, nefarious purposes. But in this, we kind of see why maybe, I mean, it doesn't excuse it necessarily, excuse, like, starting a cult, but we right. see, like, he's lonely and he just wants people to want to be around him.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that sucks. And I feel like most people have been there. And so it is nice getting a more in-depth look, you know, much like the rest of the show. They are rounding out all of the things slowly and surely.
I mean, you got to humanize your villains too, right? Those are the scariest mm-hmm. ones.
Yep, yep, yep.
I do think it's also really interesting, and I'm trying to think of another time I've seen an example in this outside of real life, but like, and it comes up, I think, but one, there's like a theme of being isolated from community that's kind of popping up in this episode, because mm-hmm. first we see Boober getting separated, and now we're seeing somebody who is already kind of on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the difference between Boober and Marlin is Marlin's response is he wants to seek power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I mean, I get that. Being lonely is incredibly disempowering. It's a really helpless thing. But the way to not be lonely isn't to get power, because the whole point of getting power is to make yourself less vulnerable. And being vulnerable is how you build those bonds that will eventually help you feel less lonely.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, Marlin wants to be admired, which is another way of saying that he wants to be seen and understood. Yeah. Like, that's, you know, that's the core humanity at this, is that, you know, everyone wants to be seen and understood. And when that need is not met, how we go about, you know, trying to get that need met, and how our societies either set us up for success or failure in trying to get those needs met. Oof.
Yeah.
It's harsh. And it's a thing I think a lot about as a teacher, because, like, I've had kids who I can tell are already on that path.
Mm-hmm.
And there are structures and institutions in place that will make it so much easier and will grease the wheels on that end. I've had kids in like sixth grade who are already starting to spout like alt-right ideology stuff, and I can tell it's because they felt really awkward, they didn't know how to make friends, nobody helped include them and showed them the tools to make sure that they could make friends,
mm-hmm.
and somebody else offering them an easy way out that would make them feel good found them first.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked in an earlier episode about isolation being, you know, the tactic of so many, like, the alt-right and people who scam other folks and mm-hmm. religion. And yeah.
It's an abuse tactic. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting to see that play into Marlin, who is part of the community and is around. But obviously, folks do not have, like, the highest opinion of him, and the way that has shaped his need for being seen and understood, but also, because of the way he's treated, he wants power. Because, like, in his mind, he's like, if I get the power, people will like and admire me. When, you know, that's not typically the way to go about being liked and admired, you know, by most people.
Yeah.
But it will make you feel feared. And feeling feared is also a feeling of being powerful.
Yeah.
I just finished listening to the audiobook of An Absolutely Remarkable Thing, about to start the sequel, Beautifully Foolish Endeavor. And yeah, that's kind of what it's all about. Power and fame and what innocent good people do with that, and how it shapes how we see each other and the world, and what fame does to us individually and on a mass societal level. Oof.
Yeah.
But with space robots.
I like space robots. So Gobo decides he's going to play a trick on Red and just really leans into being his absolute douchebag mm-hmm. self.
Yeah, this is Gobo's worst self.
Mm-hmm. And Red and Marlin are about, they're like, oh, I see it. And it turns out it's just Gobo in like a weird shark fin hat.
Purple shark fin hat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, you know, Marlin is like, why must they play such cruel jokes? Like, yeah, good question, Marlin.
Yeah.
And in a way that makes me think he's probably had this stuff, you know, quote unquote jokes played on him a lot before.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And Red is like, come on, don't let them get to you, Marlin.
It's another really good moment of solidarity, honestly.
Yeah.
Makes me sad that Marlin turns out not to be deserving of such. But yeah. Like, it is a really solid moment of her being like, hey, like, they're not worth it.
Yeah. And Gobo, of course, immediately like, hey, Red, where's your sense of humor?
Oh my god, I wanted to throttle him.
Right? Yeah. In the next scene, like, you know, they do the thing, which, you know, we'll get to in the next episode. We actually get an apology in the next episode, so that's a nice thing.
Yeah.
In this one, though, you know, we get, I noted the move that Boober pulled of, like, packing up with Red, because she's like, I'm going to pack up and I'm going to go stay by the pond until I see it and I can prove to everybody. And with Moki and Gobo, neither of them say, we're sorry. They say, I think Gobo says it was only a practical joke. And then Moki says the line, we didn't mean to hurt your feelings, which is like, Moki, right. That's not an apology.
You almost got it, but you're not there yet.
Intent versus impact, Moki.
Intent versus impact.
Yeah.
I will say I appreciate there's a really nice puppetry moment where, so, you know, again, Fraggle's in water, Gobo like splashes up out of the water. And then in the next shot where they're all talking and arguing, Gobo is like, he's got his hands up on the rock, like when you're in a swimming pool and you grab onto the ledge.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like lightly bobbing up and down as if he's still in the water.
Wow.
But in this shot, the puppeteer would not have been in the water. It's just a light bobbing up and down to make it look like he's in the water.
That's great.
So Red is like, no, screw you. I'm going to go live here until I see it. And she packs up and she leaves, which is the second time we've seen a Fraggle full on just leave the community.
In one season.
This season.
Yeah.
And she gets back and Marlin is setting up a trap.
So I think it's worth noting when she's on her way out and Moki, of course, is the one, you know, trying to stop her.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, oh, Red, we didn't mean to hurt your feelings. And Red says, hurt feelings have nothing to do with it. Like,
Red.
Sweetie. Don't they, though?
It has everything to do with it.
It has a little to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Marlin built a really elaborate trap in, I mean, we don't know how long he was on his own, but pretty quickly.
Yeah.
He did, yeah.
And he says, once we've captured the last of the lily creatures, they'll never laugh at us again.
Yep.
Which, having nobody laugh at you again is even a thing I can understand wanting, my guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just not through large animal exploitation.
I will say that I did laugh when he said, I have a vision. I see many Fraggles wearing special shirts with big pictures of me on the front.
Yes.
That was very funny, yeah.
And I was like, I would wear probably a special shirt with a big picture of Marlin on it at this point. So he's got me there, but not for the reasons he wants.
Yeah. He wants to set up Marlin's Monster Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And I would absolutely wear a shirt with a fan illustration of The Last of the Lily Creatures and Marlin smiling together. It says Marlin's Monster Museum.
Tough Pig Shop, get on it.
Yep.
Get on it, I'll buy one.
I also just want to point out, he's got a megaphone, and the sound design is as such that his voice gets louder whenever he's holding the megaphone up to his mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yes!
He bounces back and forth between the two, and whenever it's in front of his mouth, his voice is louder, and you can see Red mm-hmm. start a little mm-hmm. bit.
There's also a great moment where he says, I have a vision, and he raises it up to look through it like it's like a just a one-eye binocular. It's, yeah.
Yes.
It's a good prop.
So Red is utterly horrified at this,
mm-hmm.
because she does not want to, and it really is, I want to talk about what she does, and then I want to talk about what it means for me and the sort of the literary device that is getting used here.
Yeah.
Because she looks him dead in the face and lies and says she made the whole thing up because she really wanted attention.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really mad, and he's like, how could you do this? And she quotes him and says, it's something like the warped...
Call it the workings of a lonely mind.
Call it the workings of a lonely mind. And then she also starts doing a Marlin impression, like she mm-hmm, makes her face mm-hmm. shape like his and starts talking like him, and it's genuinely hilarious. But what she just got to see is that drive of hers to take the spotlight
mm-hmm.
taken to its logical extreme.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
She just got to see a mirror, and I think he got to see a mirror of himself in her, too. And neither of them liked what they saw of themselves in the other person.
Ooh, yeah. That's a really great point.
He confronts her saying, like, but you said you understood. Like, he feels betrayed because he thought he finally found someone who was on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's like, I don't want that kind of spotlight. And he says, of course you do. You'll make any sacrifice for it. Look at you. You've left all your friends to move here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that key point of showing her, like, I am what you will become if you keep going down this path.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that we get to see her values. Like, it's a really skillful bit of manipulation. Like, she has the right lie at the right time and she knows how to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also very clearly like, I want the spotlight. I do. But I'm not willing to hurt an innocent creature to get it.
Right.
And after that, I wrote, just her friend's feelings, usually. But I'm hoping this is a turning point.
Right.
And yeah, just that mirror of, like, seeing yourself in another person. It is very much like I was talking about when I got to then have creepy men flirt at me instead of being the creepy man flirting at someone else, and sort of be like, oh wow, yeah, that hits real different if you're on the other side of it. I should continue to unpack this because it's not a very pleasant experience. Which is why I always say, hey men, if you're complaining about women, make a dating profile on Grindr and just kind of see, just to see.
A big part of homophobia comes from the fact of misogyny, of like men's ultimate fear is like being treated like they treat women.
Yep.
Yeah. 100%. I have several different ideas that I have had if I have ever was going to teach a high school class. And one of them is like, yo, make a dating profile of a gender that you're not and go post online and see what happens. And like, don't meet up with anybody, obviously, but just see what it's like.
Yeah. There's a real reason why I never went on a dating app in my entire life.
Yeah, I do think it would be very interesting to see people who are used to having to deal with traditionally feminine problems realize like, oh, wow, even just getting someone to respond as a male on a dating profile is incredibly difficult. And then the more obvious and definitely more prevalent one of people who are used to male problems being like, wow, no one will leave me alone or treat me like a person.
So I have a friend from college, and their story ended up going viral because they tweeted about it, and it blew up on the internet a few years back. But him and his coworker traded emails and
You knew that guy?
My friend Martin. Yeah, him and his then coworker, they switched emails, and he got to see what it was like to be her, and she got to see what it was like to be him. And he was like, oh, people don't listen to me when I tell them things, or they question me and they say these things to me that they definitely wouldn't say to me if they knew that I was Martin and not my female coworker. And so even like outside of like how women often are treated like on dating apps is, you know, just the way that we have to maneuver ourselves around the world. And I do think things are getting better, but it's definitely still like, there's a lot of like internalized misogyny in, you know, everybody. It's same with like all of the isms and phobias and everything. Yeah. So
my favorite story that came out of the discussion about that was somebody who was a woman in industry being like, yeah, I made up a male assistant for me who just like explains all of why I do what I do. And then everything gets easier.
Yeah. There's a reason when I take my car in to the shop to get fixed, I bring my partner with me sometimes because I'm like, maybe they treat me the way they would treat anybody, but I don't know that. And so I'm just going to bring a man with me. That sucks, but also might go probably better if I do.
Yeah.
I've been the dude that people tap because they need a somewhat impending, well-dressed white dude to kind of stand behind them and look disapproving.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it works. And it shouldn't, but it does.
Really does. this world.
What a world.
What a place that
we
all
why are people having kids?
I literally just had a conversation with my aunt this afternoon about why I'm never having kids. Anyway.
Anyways. So we cut back to the group of Fraggles.
Well, so first...
Oh, right. You're right. Yeah, go ahead.
So Red takes down the trap, and now it's just her kind of... She says, I was just trying to use the sea monster to get everybody's attention. I didn't deserve to see it in the first place. Then she calls back to a supposed insult that Gobo threw at her before. Why would the last of the lily creatures want to hang around with Miss Perfect Braids?
She doesn't have braids.
Yeah, she does.
Aren't they pigtails?
They're both. They're like stood up like pigtails, but they are very short braids. If you look real close, there is a section that is braided.
Yep.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I've never looked that closely. I always thought that she just had, like, whatever the equivalent of a scrunchie is.
I mean, her hair's also different in this episode.
Does she normally have... Beth, you would know. Does she normally have small braids pretty much always?
Pretty much most of the time, yeah. And it's... And people will refer to her braids, like, again later.
Oh, I thought this was
different. I think they also do get called, like, pigtails again later or something. I think... Yeah, this is not the only time that they will be referred to as braids.
Okay, that's great. And I'm going to look at a picture of Red after we're done recording to examine. But okay, because Gobo did call her Miss Perfect Braids as an insult, like earlier after she had gone, come out of the water. And I was like, Gobo doesn't know what braids are. But then she brought it up and it came back into play. And we'll see the last of the lily creatures comment on them. And I was like, aren't they? They're pigtails. But okay, cool. I stand corrected.
But we do see the last of the lily creatures comment on them, and it's like, I like your braids. I think they're really cool. And that's just a really nice feeling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He says, thank you for protecting me. He says, if I cannot live here in peace, I cannot live at all. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, dang.
Mm-hmm. Love how this thing talks. The sound design on its voice is so pretty.
Yeah.
He sounded like Brad Garrett to me.
It's very deep, kind of gravelly and echoey. Mm-hmm. But also saying like very soft and sweet things in that voice.
Yeah.
Big Vin Diesel doing the Iron Giant voice energy.
Ooh, yes.
Yes. That's exactly. Yep.
Kind of I Am Groot vibes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a really lovely exchange where he thanks her. He also tells her that she's his friend and tells her to come back and see him and visit him.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I kind of assume with just like a lot of these other kind of one-off like interactions and stories we get, we probably don't see this character again. Is that correct?
I was going to ask, please tell me we see this character again.
Do you want me to tell you?
Yes.
No, we don't.
We don't.
No.
I know.
I saw that there is a small reference to the Lily creatures in the new Fraggle Rock series and like an illustration.
Right.
So this is a side note. I watched this episode with my partner,
mm-hmm.
and her first response to finding out that this creature was now in the show, and I was like, man, I hope this creature comes back. And she was like, I already Googled the fan fiction on AO3, and apparently there's no hits with Last of the Lily Creatures in Red.
Oh.
So... fan base.
You know what to do.
Get on that.
Write that fan fiction. More Fraggle Rock fan fiction.
Please. So we cut back to the Fraggles, and we get to see Gobo playing slide guitar, and you can see it. The guitar is on his lap, and he's moving his little hand to move the notes, and they got a puppet playing slide guitar, which is crazy. And the only other detail that I want to point out is Moki, they're playing this like really chill, really nice blues song. Moki is singing.
Mm-hmm.
There's doozers in the back and they're not working.
Oh, I did not notice that.
It really does look like they're just pausing to listen to her.
There are also two or three Fraggles like in the background that are also not moving like the entire time, which to me was interesting because normally when they build a scene, it feels like there's so much motion even in the background. And this one, my brain was almost stuck on those couple of Fraggles where I was like, they're clearly just positioned and no one is moving them. So that is maybe also the case with the doozers.
I mean, my read on it is just that everyone was paying sort of a reverent kind of attention.
Yeah, that's probably the intent, was to be like, everyone is just super tuned into the song that's being played. But my ADHD brain fixated on that being like, why aren't they moving? Why aren't they even like nodding their heads along?
So I also really liked this song, which is nice because I've been kind of hit her. Oh my God, there's a cat.
Kitty.
Oh, she was meowing yes, in the cat. Background. Aww. I tried to get her up here so she would settle down because she loves being held.
Can you remind me what her name is?
Mimsy.
Mimsy,
that's right.
She's purring away now.
What a sweetie.
She's so sweet. Oh my God.
Please tell Mimsy I love her.
Mimsy. Everybody loves you.
You're a very good cat.
She had her first little harness visit to the backyard yesterday. She's just so good. A little adventure kitty.
Did she try to climb up a tree?
No, but she looked like she was seriously thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. That's been my one experience.
Apparently, there was a rat living under my back porch.
Okay. Cool.
Is there no longer a rat living under your back porch?
There wasn't yesterday afternoon. We'll see if he comes back.
Heck yeah, good riddance. Anyways. So, Moki is singing, and it's this really chill blues song that they then take more upbeat, but at least stylistically, it really matches this, like, nice, chill, kind of a blues, slow drag. Not quite slow drag, but slide guitar blues in a way that I really appreciated. It's funny, I do blues dancing, and so my partner's first response is, oh, are you going to put this in your set? And I was like, thinking about it, probably not.
Also, this song, I just love the line, she had a special sort of way about her, turning all my words into song.
Mm.
But we get to see Red overhearing Moki singing and just sort of seeing this community regret for the way that they have treated her.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they did it, but we get to see her face kind of process and realize exactly what this means.
Yeah.
Without moving very much or having any lines. Like, I don't... That's god-level puppeteering, and I have no idea how they did it. But they did it, and it was amazing.
That's Karen Prill for you.
Skill.
But yeah, if she gets to, like, pause to consider her next move before, like, okay, I told Marlin that I made it all up. now it's time to tell everybody that I made it all up.
Mm-hmm.
And tell a big old lie that's going to make me look bad, but for a good reason.
Well, and she tells a different lie, too.
True. That's a good point. No, she tells Marlin that she made it up, and then she tells these guys, like, I didn't see what I thought I saw.
Mm-hmm.
It was all
a
mistake.
She made a mistake, yeah.
Which, yeah, that's an important difference.
Yeah, and then she follows it with, you know, anything to get attention, just to kind of play into the things they were ripping her about earlier on. And I liked how everyone was, like, kind of chill about it. They were like, oh, you know, that's okay, you know. And then they're just happy that she's back as well. You know, could there have been more of an apology for the way they pranked her and treated her? Probably, but...
Definitely.
You know, everyone seems like they're in a better place and kind of come to terms with how everyone acted and, you know, with them, like, believing this lie she's telling them and just kind of settling back into, like, we're all on good terms. It felt a little better to me than we've seen in some previous episodes.
Yeah. And we get that nice, you know, that thing that Fraggle Rock will sometimes do where you have a sad song and then you get a happy reprise of it.
Yeah.
Things are okay now.
It's great.
And we get Fraggle's self-yeeting into the air.
I love it so much. So many of them over and over again.
Yes.
And then they fade out as they pull into, not Red's face, but her reflection in the water.
Yes!
Which is such a good bit.
What a great shot. And it, like, stays there for a second. That you see her, like, considering herself. Which is what the whole episode is about.
Mm-hmm. And then we cut back to Doc and Sprocket, which we didn't touch on the one segment they had in the middle of the episode where Doc has, like, a Japanese cookbook and he's like, we're going to make so much food with seaweed, and Sprocket is not excited. But then when we come back to them at the end, Sprocket's doing the thing that dogs sometimes do where he's on his back, his little feet are up in the air. He's like, he's just so full of food and he's so content.
Yep.
And clearly, like, whatever, what did Doc say that he made? He made Japanese seaweed pie.
Yes.
And there are chopsticks in Sprocket's bowl, and Sprocket obviously has had a change of heart when it comes to a food he wasn't expecting to like.
I mean, we know he has thumbs.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Yeah. I want to see Sprocket use some chopsticks.
I would watch. Can you imagine someone puppeteering a puppet to the point where it is using chopsticks?
Yes.
Because that sounds insane. Good God.
Big Bird in China.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. Big Bird in Japan.
Did that happen? Oh, my God. I will Google this later.
We should watch Big Bird in Japan and Big Bird in China together. They're both great.
Please.
They were two of my favorites growing up, and so I know way more about them than anyone should.
Beth, you keep saying this with an apologetic tone. Like, that's not the whole point of this podcast.
Right. Good point. Yes. Thank you. Okay.
So my last two notes for this episode are, the second to last one is Japanese seaweed pie, hyphen, and then Beth in all caps, and then sea slug casserole, and then Beth with a bunch of E's, all caps. When are you going to make it, Beth?
Look, I have to draw the line somewhere. Seaweed pie, sure. Sea slug casserole, not happening.
Sure. I don't know anything about sea slugs. I know that they are a real thing. I don't know if you would want to actually
consume
one.
I don't know
one.
Either, and I don't want to know. Like, if there's a culture that regularly eats sea slugs, good for you, as long as it's done sustainably. But I'm not going there.
I do bet that there is a way to incorporate seaweed into a pie. I don't know. Well, I don't know if it could be the main taste. I think it'd have to be paired with something. But
right? Like in the same way that you would use spinach or something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's the thing is, I'm imagining, because you can kind of get like spinach in like a, like eggs or something like that. You can get like that like chunk of spinach that's like cooked and kind of like mushy. You could have that as like the filling of a pie with like a couple other things, but it's just such a salty flavor. You would need something else to kind of accentuate it.
Yeah. You'd need to pair it with another thing or two.
Like so a rice pudding or something.
Ooh, you know, just saying, Beth. You gotta make a Fraggle Rock cookbook. Got a pair with Henson.
I mean, Beth, you might not necessarily succeed the first time, but you should at least do your best.
Ooh.
Don't you steal my favorite pun. I like to sign off my emails to people with all the best.
Do you really?
Yes.
That's amazing.
I love you so much, my friend.
That's...
You are a twinkle of delight in my existence.
That's awesome.
Oh, well, how can we make the world a little fragglier, you guys? Considering that there are no notes on the international versions, which is sad.
I was going to ask. I'll go serious on this one. And I was thinking about, like, saying, like, hey, like, you know, maybe if there's, like, a strange person who's making people uncomfortable, find somebody who can have the conversation safely and have that. But no, if you are that strange person and you are making people uncomfortable, the step one is to stop and try to figure out about how your actions are going to make other people feel. Because one of the most easiest mindsets to be isolated is one where you're not necessarily viewing people as people. You're sort of viewing them as the gatekeepers to the gift of attention or community or whatever. And the second one is, there are a lot of really good websites about just how to build up social skills in a way that is, you know, genial and welcoming and will help you interact with people in a way that doesn't come off as off-putting. There's an autistic dude who has a website called How to Have a Conversation. And there's no shame in brushing up on your social skills a little bit.
Yeah, when the social rules are unspoken, it helps to have someone speak them.
Yeah. And then the last one is go to therapy. Those are really the big three. I highly recommend it. If you are feeling really isolated, those are the three that have been the most helpful for me. And I hope they're really helpful for you, too, as you go to try to make the world a little fragglier.
I will say, lying is usually not a good thing. But sometimes, if it is to protect someone's autonomy or their boundaries...
Or their safety,
it can be the right move to take.
I will say, process your feelings through song by a lovely little pond, and you never know what could happen.
Awesome. Y'all want to plug your pluggables?
You can find me on social media at Beth Anna Cook. I just joined Blue Sky. We'll see if it's a thing that I keep up with. And occasionally writing stuff for Tough Pigs. Oh, and I'm not sure when it's airing, but I was recently recorded as a guest on Movin' Right Along for minutes 23 and 24 of Muppet Treasure Island. And that was a whole lot of fun.
Nice.
You
can find me at Geek Girl Grown Up. I am mostly on Instagram. I am on Blue Sky, and now also for some reason Threads. Who knows if I'll actually use those. You can find me at juliagaskell.com for poetry, occasionally on Tough Pigs. And because I think that it's coming up when we release this, if you are in the Portland area or you can get to the Portland area mid-June, there's going to be a poetry festival over the course of June 13th to 15th with a lot of free events, workshops, open mics. There's going to be a big slam tournament. You know, come on out. The Bigfoot Poetry Festival. That's going to be a great time.
But what if I have little feet? Can I still come?
We'll accommodate you. Everyone is invited.
Yay!
It's an entirely free and open event. There's only our final stage is the one ticketed event. Everything else is free.
It's a very cool time.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me by following your nose.
Are you a box of Fruit Loops?
Shh! Don't give the game away!
Oh, sorry! I'll cut that.
Toucan Sam is here with us in the room.
Thank you for listening to us. Don't forget to dance your cares away.
Down at Fraggle Talk.
Fraggle Talk Classic is brought to you by ToughPigs.com. Fraggle Talk art by Dave Hultin Jr. The Fraggle Rock mark and logo, characters, and elements are trademarks of the Jim Henson Company. All rights reserved. The Fraggle Rock theme song, written by Philip Balsam and Dennis Lee, is used with permission. Special thanks to the Jim Henson Company and the entire Fraggle Rock family. For more from Tough Pigs, please find us at Tough Pigs on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, TeePublic, and Patreon. Fraggle Talk Classic is produced and edited by me, Beth Cook. Thank you to Joe Hennis, the Tough Pigs Muppet Fan Podcast Executive Producer. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time, down at Fraggle Talk.
Oh, I love Sarah now.
So good. Anyway, point being.
Line being. And then they fight. And it's the geometry wars.
Oh my god.
I'm sorry. You were trying to get us back on track. Please continue.